In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening. Please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest is Steve Berlin, saxophone player and keyboardist in the long-running Los Angeles band Los Lobos. We'll talk to Steve about his career with the group, but first, let's give a listen to Will the Wolf Survive from their 1984 album How Will the Wolf Survive? And afterwards, I'll be back with Steve for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. Stephen's Underground Garage, and we're ready for the coolest conversations for today. I'm joined by Steve Berlin, saxophonist, keyboardist, and a record producer, best known as a member of Los Lobos. How are you, Steve?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you very much. You were from Philadelphia originally?
I am.
And how did you get out to Los Angeles? Where did you grow up, first of all?
Well, I grew up in the northwest suburbs, just outside of Philly. I came to LA initially with a band called the Soul Survivors, who had a hit in the 60s with Expressway to Your Heart. So they had their backup band was all friends of mine, and I would jam with them, hang out. You're just my pals. And they all, as a band, they moved to LA. And within weeks of arriving, I mean, they were a killer band. So within weeks of arriving, they were backing up both Greg Allman and Billy Preston. So they said, you got to come out here. It's awesome. It's easy. So I packed up and moved out. And as within 2 weeks of my arrival, they lost both those gigs. So high and dry a little bit. But I was in L.A., so, you know, it's all good.
Well, how old were you at the time?
I was 19.
Wow, okay. Because, yeah, you know, we play, like, Expressway to My Heart. That's, like, one of Stephen's fave tunes.
Yeah,
you
know?
Pretty cool.
Yeah, so that's how I got there.
Okay, so this is about what year?
I arrived Christmas 74.
So you must get plugged in pretty quickly with the scene. I know before you joined Los Lobos, you were playing with the Blasters. How did you fall in with those guys?
Well, so the band that I came out with, we put a band together. We made a record in the late 70s, but I was the youngest in the band by about 10 years. And it didn't really go anywhere. so the band was kind of falling apart. And right about then was when the scene that became, you know, whatever you want to call it, the scene that birthed us and X and the Blasters was sort of starting. So I was kind of paying attention to that. And just my main entree was there's a guy named Fast Freddy, who was a writer and a DJ and a musician. So he put a band together, and that band opened for the Blasters, opened for X. He was kind of a beloved character. So through him is everybody that I'd be working with basically for the rest of my life, more or less. And then I was working at a music store in Hollywood. And this was before cell phones, even, and the phone rings at the store. And it was Dave Alvin asking if I owned a baritone sax, because they wanted me to play on a song. And I did not, but I said that I did. Luckily, at the music store, there was one. So, yeah, more or less the next 48 hours, I was in the Blasters.
You joined the Blasters. Was famed 50s R&B, early rock and roll sax player Lee Allen sitting in with them from time to time, or was he like a member of the band?
He was a member of the band. So he was in, like, after the first album. So the first album was just the four-piece. Then they added Lee and Gene Taylor on piano. And then right as they were making that record, that's when I showed up. So I think it was by the second record, it's all of us on the album cover. We're all in the band. And that was something. Lee was my buddy, my roommate for a couple of years there, and also my hero. So it was really quite a propitious to join that band.
Well, just in case people don't know, he played with Fats Domino and Lloyd Price, Wee Pownell Smith and the Clowns, all this great New Orleans stuff, Little Richard's early records. He's the guy playing the sax on the solo sections when they have them. He had his own hit, Walking with Mr. Lee. And so you get to hang out with him. Do you recall any stories that he ever shared that you were just like, I can't believe that?
Just being like around him, like just sort of observing from close in, like how, what a pro he was and what a gentleman he was. And, he was just the nicest, kindest, sweetest guy in the world and the best saxophone player in the world, in my opinion. So it was just an object lesson on how to behave, more or less, more than anything else. He was just a gentleman every day.
And when you got that call for the baritone, was that just out of the blue?
Not really out of the blue. So I like before that call, I had played on a record with Dave and John Doe, interestingly enough, with a band called the Flesh Eaters. So that was me, Dave, John, Bill from the Blasters, Don from the X, and a singer named Chris D. So that was pre-everything. That was pre-Blasters, pre-Lobos. I was just there, and they wanted sax on the record. And then so that band, we didn't do many gigs because obviously Dave was in the Blasters and John was in X, but the shows we did were pretty powerful. So it wasn't like that, Dave, it wasn't totally out of the blue, but I don't think he knew that I played baritone, because I didn't play baritone until that afternoon. So that's kind of how that started.
Wow. How did you make this transition from the Blasters into Los Lobos?
Well, I had been on the Blasters for about 2 years or so, and they were slowly ascending the musical food chain in LA. And so we finally arrived at Four Nights at the Whiskey, which is like definitely the high water mark for the band at that point. Like we, worked our way up, and that was very, very powerful and impactful. It was sort of like, okay, we've arrived, more or less. And they had a different band opening every show, four nights, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, if I remember. And it was a different band opening every night. And then it was Friday night was this band Los Lobos opening up. And I had seen a band called Los Lobos open for Public Image like 2 years or so, maybe more prior, playing acoustic folk music to a bunch of punks and getting the shit, like everything that could be thrown at them. And I thought, well, can't be the same band. I mean, it'd be interesting, but I don't think it would work at the Whiskey the same way it didn't really work at the Olympic. But sure enough, it was the same band, and they had plugged in and electrified, and they quite literally blew everybody that was there just away. It was like nobody had ever seen anything like them. I certainly hadn't ever seen anything like them. And it was just like two great voices, two very distinct songwriting styles, and then all the Latin stuff. So it was just mind-boggling that this band had formed basically in the shadows of this scene. Like no one had, outside of, the people that they grew up around in East LA, had ever seen them play. So they arrived that night and blew everybody away, and we just became friends. They said, there's a couple of these songs that we're playing have sax parts. You want to come to a rehearsal and play it with us. So that's pretty much how it started. And then for about two or so years after that, I was like every possible opportunity I could manage, I was playing with them. I'd take red eyes home from Blasters gigs on the East Coast to play a Quinceañera at 2 p.m. in East LA, just because I love playing with them so much. They got signed to Slash, and I was still in the Blasters when that record started. So it was me and T-Bone Burnett produced the first EP. And then by the time the record was done, I was in the band. I basically left the Blasters at that point and joined Los Lobos.
And so then, and the departure from the Blasters, that wasn't on bad terms or anything, is my understanding.
No, it was not. I mean, I'm still very close with all of them. They were kind of falling apart, to be blunt about it. Like Dave and Phil were kind of, they were always, I mean, the band on a good day, they were always at odds, like most brother bands. And on a bad day, it was really bad. And I could tell that Dave was kind of itching to not have to basically pass everything through his brother's filter, because Phil had very strict rules about what he would and wouldn't do and how he would approach stuff. And, you know, he was extremely uncoachable, I guess we could say, it wasn't hard to see that the band, I mean, it was always on the verge of coming apart in some sense, but it was not a very momentous decision. It was not, they were fighting all the time. Dave wanted to do other stuff. And, you know, that's one side of my life. And then the other side, here are these guys that are, you know, happy to have me play, and they all get along and they never fight. And it was just sort of like pretty black and white about which way I should go. Now, I did not think at the time I would be there 45 years later, but you know, that's life.
That's life. Well, so you mentioned this, Los Lobos kind of appearing on this scene, right? They've been doing all this work, where, you know, playing together for a while, but they just weren't on the radar of this sort of greater scene that was going on.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really, it was extraordinary. They were playing, like, you know, routinely
weddings and stuff,
every
right?
week. Yeah. Weddings, parties, you know, any event at all. But you know, they had like at least 5 gigs a week and probably more. Like some weeks there'd be like 2 or 3 gigs a day. Just like Quinceañeras, parties, weddings, funerals. I mean, you name it, they played it. So, I mean, I'm not saying in any way that Los Lobos is like the Beatles, but like the way the Beatles story reads, where they went to Hamburg for 2 years outside of any form of radar and basically learned how to be a band, that was Los Lobos. Like they spent 7 years, you know, working and making money and feeding their families, but completely off the radar of anybody and anything in the quote unquote scene. Like nobody, I don't think even Dave or Phil Alvin had seen them. They booked them on the strength of a cassette that I think Louis gave to Dave, and that's how they got the whiskey gig.
Well, let's talk somebody about Native Sons. The album from 2021, Native Sons, that's still the most recent album from you guys, studio album from you guys?
Yes, it is.
Now, you mentioned earlier some recording where maybe you said you had produced along with, we're talking about the Blasters there, maybe it was you and Dave had produced something.
Me and T-Bone Burnett produced the first.
Lost Lobos. Okay. So for Native Sons, I've seen you listed as producer. And that's correct, right? You produced Native Sons, or was that a group?
It's at this point, like, you know, we as a band produce it. I mean, it's not, yeah, it's not me doing all the heavy lifting. I mean, we kind of know what we want. Everybody sort of understands what their role is. So it's not like anybody's functionally in charge, for better or worse.
Well, is it a case of the inmates running the prison, but they're doing a pretty good job?
Yeah, that's not far from that. No, it's you know, everybody does their job more or less, and I do mine.
Well, the song off it I want us to take a listen to is Flat Top Joint, which was done first by the Blasters off their debut 1980 album American Music, and you're not on that Blasters version of the song.
No, so that was the first Blasters record. I believe that was the one on Rollin' Rock, if I'm not mistaken. So that was the one before the first Slash record.
Yeah.
You know, the concept of Native Sons was basically gratitude for the people and bands and musicians that more or less formed Los Lobos. So we just kind of made a list of everybody that we thought somehow, some way we could thank musically, I guess would be the approach.
Yeah.
And certainly there was absolutely no way in the world that anybody would have ever heard of Los Lobos without the Blasters for many, many reasons, not just the whiskey show, but like their, you know, their support, their counsel, just, it was so, you know, unbelievably important for us in the early years that the Blasters were our friends, basically. So that was job one. We had to, you know, somehow, some way, thank them for everything they did for us.
What I like about your selection of the tune is that it's not one that you played on. So did you, why that song? Why was it? Yeah, hey, you know, this one I never got to play on. I want us to do this. Or what was going on to choose that tune?
Well, we played Marie. We'd been doing that one for a while live, but the idea was to do something that we hadn't done before, like try and make it different somehow. And, you know, it was really like the song choices were up to the guys that had to sing them. So like, you know, that was one that Dave felt like he could make his own. But it wasn't much deeper than that. It wasn't like, you know, we had to go through the whole catalog. It was like, Dave really loved that song. And it turns out to be one of the first songs that Dave Alvin ever wrote. So it was somewhat, you know, it was a good choice. I think Dave Alvin approved. So I felt pretty good about it.
Yeah, it has significance on many different levels.
Yes, indeed. And it's fun to play. We do it every night. I mean, we just played it last night. I'm sure we'll probably play it tonight. It's a ball to play.
All right. Well, Matt, Steve, thanks a bunch for speaking to me on our Coolest Conversations.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And now we'll head over to the Flat Top Joint with Los Lobos and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Cats called the Flat Top Joint. The Flat Top Joint. The band starts rocking at midnight. Boy, you know you can't stand still. They got barbecue ribs, beer and wine. Sometimes you know there ain't no build on that.
That was Los Lobos, and they had us out of the Flat Top Joint here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks to the band's Steve Berlin for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza and Kurt Baker for producing our podcast. This is the Mighty Manfred, and catch you again next time around for your Coolest Conversations presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.